So good afternoon, everyone. We're looking at a News and Focus article that was emailed to me by a dude by the name of Peter. Thank you. And it's from townhall.com. It's January 29th, 2015. The author of the article is Dr. Ben Carson. And anybody feel comfortable giving us a little intro on who Ben is?
He's the emeritus from Johns Hopkins, the pediatric neurosurgeon. And he's a Seventh-day Adventist, kind of a conservative hero when he criticized the health care plan with President Obama sitting four seats away or whatever. Grew up poor. Mom made him learn to read and really educated him and his brother. And he's been very successful and is a hero now, cult hero.
A potential presidential candidate for 2016.
Right. Prayer breakfast, right? Wasn't that where he was?
Yeah, I think so.
And it kind of catapulted him basically into national fame almost. I mean,
overnight.
I had never heard of the dude before.
I had heard of him only because I think HBO made a movie about him called What God Has Wrought or something like that. It's had to do with his surgery on
I think it was called Gifted Hands or
Gifted
something.
Gifted Hands, where he's doing surgery.
That's a book
he got about. Yeah, Cuba Gooding Jr. played him in the movie.
Wasn't he doing surgery on pre-born babies? I think they're
something
in utero
like that,
and he's doing surgery on something. It's really amazing, and you can still get it today.
On HBO?
No, probably it's on
somebody
DVD.
Somebody made it. I don't know what. Yeah. Well, it was one of the networks made a movie about it.
Yeah.
Can we figure out the name of it?
Yeah, I'm looking right.
All
right.
Yeah. I didn't know about the movie. It might be worth watching. So, Brian, introduce the article.
All right. The title is When Politics Defy Reality, The Real State of the Union Features Dishonesty and Deception. In his recent State of the Union address, President Obama was upbeat and inspiring, particularly if a listener had no prior knowledge of his many speeches that were quite similar but bore no fruit. It almost appeared that he was living in an alternate universe that bore no resemblance to present-day America and the current global stage.
All right, stop. What a great sentence.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who knows how to write.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about crafting words. An alternate universe that bore no resemblance to present-day America and the current global stage. Go ahead.
He boasted that the economy was doing very well and that unemployment had been cut in half since he took office. Perhaps someone should educate him about the labor force participation rate, which is at its lowest point in the past 36 years and reflects the number of people who are actually working versus the number of people who are eligible to work. The unemployment rate can easily be manipulated in whichever direction one desires, including and excluding certain groups of people.
All right, so let's stop for a minute. So my contention is that the typical American is either so ignorant or stupid, I'm not sure which is the better word, that they don't even know, they don't even have a clue what the labor force participation rate is. And since they're keyed into the idea that all numbers are supposed to be low, they don't even understand that a low number is bad. I mean, I think that's the depth of ignorance that we're dealing with here. So the labor force participation rate. David, give us a better understanding of what that's all about.
The idea here is unemployment numbers are people that are actually applying for jobs. So you can trace that number. The labor force participation rate is that unemployment doesn't take into account the many people that are not even trying to get jobs. The number of people that are just staying home and collecting unemployment or collecting the entitlement program or whatever. And so that number of people that are not working is actually much higher than the number that they like to put out as an unemployment rate.
Yeah, this is really the number we should be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
This is far more important than the other number. I can be looking for a job in the month of February, stop looking for jobs in March, and it's like I got a job.
Yeah, you're no longer counted in the equation.
That's right. Yeah. Even though I'm not paying taxes, I'm not making any financial contribution to the economy, it's like I got a job.
Yeah, and not to mention the numbers that are what they might call the underemployed, those that are now used to work full-time but now have to work part-time, whether it be because of the health care mandates or anything else. So not only are we have more unemployed, more people that aren't looking for jobs, but more people that are now working part-time that used to work full-time. So the numbers are even larger scale than what even the president tries to spin.
And the flip on that is now teenagers, 17, 18, mm-hmm. 19 years old, their jobs are being taken by people that wouldn't used to have to mm-hmm. take yeah. that job mm-hmm. because of this
right
underfunding mm-hmm. at the job that they're currently at.
Yeah, you think about, for example, the Chick-fil-A's that we frequent in town. There are two of them. And in days gone by, the person wiping the tables down and doing that would have been a teenager.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Now it's nearly always a senior citizen. Mm-hmm. It's nearly, I mean, you see that everywhere. Senior citizens are working longer than they've ever worked in their life.
And half of the people that are working behind the counter now are adults. I mean,
grown adults. You know? Absolutely.
I mean, when I was growing up, it was all teenagers back there.
Right, right. It is an adult world in many regards to that. And then the reverse is that there's not as many people working because that minimum wage is where it is. You just simply can't afford to have that, so they're constantly reducing the number that are working here.
All right, so this movie is called Gifted Hands. It's produced in 19—Cuba Gooding Jr. stars in a true story about a renowned brain surgeon. So I had my surgery movies mixed up. Who overcame obstacles to change the course of medicine forever. Young Ben Carson didn't have much of a chance. Growing up in a broken home amongst poverty and prejudice, his grades suffered and his temper flared, and yet his mother never lost her faith in him, insisting he follow opportunities she never had and helped to grow his imagination, intelligence, and most importantly, his belief in himself. So he goes on to be one of the most gifted neurosurgeons. And the movie I was thinking about is called Something the Lord Made, about a African-American surgeon in the 1940s and 50s. So, but the one about Ben Carson
is Gifted Hands.
Gifted Hands, and you can get a copy on Amazon for $8.
It is not on Netflix, however.
It is not on Netflix?
Not streaming, anyways.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, that's indicative. All right.
He also boasted about the record-high stock market numbers. He failed to indicate that savings accounts and certain types of bonds, which used to be the mechanism whereby average Americans could enhance their net worth over a long period of time, were no longer appealing. And that the stock market was one of the few places where gains could be made. While the stock market has always been particularly relevant to the wealthier members of society, the influx of these smaller investors is further driving the income gap.
Okay, so let's unpack what his message is here. So he's saying here that the average Joe doesn't own stocks, that the average guy can't buy stocks, that he doesn't have the time, the ideas, how to make that happen. He would count on the fact that in the savings account, he was getting 5% or 6% or whatever. And now, you're like, what do we even have a savings account for? What, 1%?
Yeah, I get a penny a month.
Right, 1.5. It's a joke.
Yeah.
Right. And so all this, when he's bragging about the record high stock numbers, the income disparity between the upper class and the working class is just growing. Mm-hmm.
Which is one of his big platforms, right? Which is what, you know,
exactly.
We're trying to eliminate that gap, and yet he's touting something in his speech that is actually furthering that gap.
Well, and that's the, you know, why this guy's seen as someone who's willing to say the hard things is because, you know, what they say is the plan for success to, you know, overcome this 1% idea mm-hmm. is actually in reality widening the gap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's behavioral. And that's the problem. It's not just situations. It's underlying sinful behavior that it markets to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. So he talked about the need to further tax the rich because they are not paying their fair share. He failed to mention that the top 1% pays 37% of the federal income taxes while earning 19% of the income. Since he is so concerned about fairness, perhaps he should consider a proportional or a flat tax, which hits everyone according to their ability to pay. To make this even more fair, we could eliminate all loopholes.
So again, the numbers, the top 1% pay almost 40%. Now, that's an astronomical number right there.
And yet they do not pay their fair share.
Right. That was the single word that was used more than any other word in the State of Union Address was the word fair.
Mm-hmm. I believe their fair share would be 1%, wouldn't it?
So they earn the very most, and they pay an astronomical amount, while earning only 19% of the income. Okay.
All right. And again, those are the guys that ultimately create the jobs.
Well, sure, they're the
ultimately
guys
that they do. And every time taxes go up, they cut the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And then it just trickles mm-hmm. down.
Or they move it overseas, right?
Or they move it overseas.
Yeah. More advantageous places. Right.
But he has the idea, and he's not alone. A lot of idiots have the idea mm-hmm. that the corporation is just willing to lower the bottom line. That they're just willing to make less money. That for the good of the nation, they'll pay more and just make less. They don't seem to understand. He doesn't seem to understand. There's a point at which you decide that the headache is not worth it anymore. That all that it takes to be that small business owner, all that it takes to run, to start Home Depot, to start Apple, to start Lowe's, to keep going, that at one point you say, you know what? The amount I'm making is simply not worth it anymore for the amount of energy that it takes to do that. And he kind of thinks that they're just going to do it because it's just a good thing to do.
Yeah, like we said, it's interesting that he can, on one hand, say, well, look at our stock market. Look how healthy our stock market is. Those evil rich people. We really didn't tax them more. Why do you think the stock market is doing so well? I mean, those the same two groups of people talking out of both sides of your mouth. It makes no sense.
The cashier at McDonald's is not running your portfolio.
Well, the guy that just came home from the distribution.
Although you might think so sometimes.
Yeah, the guy that just came from the distribution center that's got a beer in his lap eating popcorn is not thinking, yeah, man, my stock market's doing great. He flips the channel and goes back over to ESPN. I don't have a stock market.
The other piece to follow on what you said, David, is the guy who he wants to tax, it doesn't impact his standard of living.
No.
All it impacts is the amount of money he has left over to invest in the stock market.
Yeah,
that's where it's going.
Yeah, and the thing is when you're talking about people with that much money, it's the same reason why they jumped all over Mitt Romney in the last presidential election and said, look, he doesn't even pay much more taxes than you do. Well, it's because he's not making a salary. He's already paid taxes on all that money. He's paying money on his investments. So he only paid 15% in taxes this year. Yeah, it's because he paid 35% when he made it the first time, and now they're just taxing his investment income because he doesn't collect a salary.
Right.
Because he's smart enough to know, I don't need to pay myself in a salary for my corporations because they're going to drag me over the coals in taxes. And everybody in the United States would do that exact same thing. You know, the guy that makes $50,000 or the guy that makes $75,000 or whatever the thing is, you're not going to say, you know what, I'm going to pay 30. I know I could pay 15, but I'm going to pay 30. Nobody thinks that way, and yet they're the ones that get totally criticized for it, and yet they're furthering his argument.
His claim that we are winning the war against terrorism, even though he failed to mention the name of the radical Islamists who are behind the terror, was almost laughable in light of its rapid growth and spread throughout the world. He appeared not to recognize that our premature withdrawal of troops from Iraq was a mistake that facilitated the development of the Islamic State. His bravado about chasing the terrorists and eliminating them bears no resemblance to his actual policies and demonstrates his contempt for the intelligence of his audience,
or the lack thereof, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of this it confirms the yeah. ability that what people are thinking. They're just nodding their head. Most of the people that actually still watch this are people that support him. Everybody else is kind of like, I didn't watch it. I already know what he's going to say.
Sometimes I wish it was like England, because if you've ever watched on C-SPAN, you know those England when the other party says something they don't like. Boy, yeah, they let them know. Whoa, no. You know, I mean, that's great.
Well, a powdered wig empowers you, I think, you know, is what the lesson
and they're slamming that gavel. And stuff.
Well, my favorite part was when he was talking about closing Gitmo, and they zoomed in on all the generals,
yeah.
and the generals were just cutting him in half with the stares. Like, you are a moron. You have no idea what you're talking about. Well, what was the slogan there for years and years? Is Osama bin Laden is dead and GM is alive? Well, maybe not. Maybe that wasn't the best way. ISIS is, or you know, Al Qaeda is on the run. ISIS is the JV team. Well, where's all that now?
Well,
they seem to have a bit of a foothold over there now.
Well, it's all George W. Bush's fault because he went to Iraq in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's just what they say. If we hadn't got over there to begin with, then it would be
once again bad math. But
what's that?
Bad math again, just like the 1%.
But the reality is most Americans couldn't tell you what ISIS even is. The vast majority of Americans
would have no clue what ISIS is.
Well, unless they had a song on their iPhone, then they know.
Yeah, well, and plus it's being suppressed because, you know, we will not call it Islamic.
Right.
You know, we can't ascribe it to that.
And so, now BBC won't, or part of the network over in Britain right now, won't call them terrorists anymore either.
There you go. Yeah. So, and then at the same time, you've got this for years and years now at the universities and in public schools and everywhere else. We're pushing this pluralism, this tolerance, this, yep, you know, not all Muslims are terrible. And I'm not saying that right now, but that's the storyline. We have to respect all religions. All religions are valid. Everything's equal across the board. And so at that, while I'm getting that from one side and the president won't call it Islamic on the other side, mm-hmm, well, then I'm not going to identify it like that. I'm not going to really know exactly what's talking about. Okay, there's some crazy guys with guns over there, you know. They're just as bad as the crazy Christians with guns, because they all, you know, the NRA is more vilified than ISIS is. So that's where we are.
Well, the funny thing is, I sent this to Bill the other day, is one of the reasons why the percentage of violence is not as high among these radical Islams is because in some countries, they have complete control, and their people are completely afraid to do anything. So they don't have to be violent anymore.
The videos on YouTube are enough to deter some of that behavior.
I'm not saying nothing if I live in this country or that country, because they'll chop my head off. So there isn't a need for them to be violent, mm-hmm, because they have such fear inside it on the people that live under them.
Not much different than the people who have a gang in their neighborhood in some of the inner cities, mm-hmm, and the gang is running the show.
Well, it's the same thing when you had a mafia in a neighborhood.
Right.
I'm going to pay you the money because I don't want you to close my business, set my business on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He demonstrated great courage in talking about how the Affordable Care Act is actually resulting in a reduction in health care spending.
We got sarcasm.
Yeah.
Demonstrated great courage.
Great courage.
This may be true on some levels, but the reason for the decreased spending is secondary to the reluctance of people to seek medical care when they have deductibles of thousands of dollars.
Oh, man.
There you go.
That's cool.
Yeah. And this is a guy from the medical industry. I think he knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
Well, just consider that when Hutch was born, we paid $4 out of pocket, and with this new one, we've already paid $1,500. So just to think about the amount of money that...
Well, you changed jobs, right?
No, I didn't change jobs.
You didn't change jobs.
Company. So, no. I mean, that's the idea. And I had to do this. But I can tell you, Candace and I are not jumping at the bit to go to the doctor. Like, Candace goes for her checkups for her thyroid less than she went before. So spending is less, but only because we're not going as much. So I think, mm-hmm, I think his point is well taken. People just aren't going to go anymore. And ultimately, doctors are going to... not be happy about that if people quit going to the doctor.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to somebody this morning, though, and they said that the insurance companies now, because of the Affordable Care Act, are actually telling the doctors that they have to see their patients at least twice a year to maintain the benefits or to maintain their payment schedule from the insurance companies. And, you know, of course, they can't make the patients come twice a year, but... they have to document, you know, that they're scheduling them every 6 months rather than annually, you know, which I was like, I said, you know, the person I was talking to, I said, you gotta be kidding me. I said, that's just more money they're spending. I said, why would they do that? And they said, well, the goal is that, you know, they'll catch, you know, sicknesses or catch things sooner so it actually costs them less in the long run, which, okay, I understand that the potential of that, but on the flip side, you know, seems like they're going to be spending a whole lot more in the interim.
Yeah, and it also seems to create a waiting lists.
Right, yeah.
I mean, doesn't that mean you're going to be able to have, you know, you're going to need more doctors, right? And, yeah.
Well, I heard this morning of several counties and places in Northern California where there's only one insurance on the health marketplace list. You got one option. Whereas before all this, you know, seven or eight options. They just pull out because... kidding. The deal's not sweet enough for the insurance company. They're like...
well, that's, once again, that's what we were talking about before. The president has this idea that the insurance companies exist to provide services to the people.
And that's because that's the way life was modeled. That's the way life was modeled. Because all this talk about empowerment, it's going down the road of more slavery. Mm-hmm. When you have to depend on someone else for your success, that's not empowerment. That's more slavery. And we just got it all wrong.
Well, the typical, again, consumer doesn't understand that the insurance company exists to make money. Mm-hmm. And well, lots of it.
Well, it's a gamble for them. That's the whole point of insurance. It's a gamble. If I charge you this amount of money, I'm gambling that I'm not actually going to have to pay when you get brain cancer. That's the gamble that they're that they're going to do.
Right, and that's one of the reasons why they're trying to force guys like our young single males on staff into the insurance pool, because they're not going to get pregnant, you know, they don't get sick as much, so we need you paying lots of dollars because we need it from you to give to the other entity.
Yeah, you're not doing your fair share.
Yep. Right, and by doing their fair share means you're buying insurance that you actually don't need. I mean, that's the very idea there.
Yeah, it's false altruism. It really is, because, I mean, it's funny that it comes from the left, from the liberals, because what is their whole mantra? Is do what you want, you know, there is no God to be responsible to, on, and then yet, you know, they're the ones constantly preaching about, you know, you got to do something for somebody, you know, those who have need to give to those who don't. And I mean, it's just, it's so backwards, and at the root of it, it's really humanism and in its greatest display, because the end of pluralism is tyranny. I mean, I don't know how it's going to happen, but it's headed that way. We talk about those Muslim countries where they're not afraid to, I mean, they there's really no police needed because everyone's in fear.
Yeah. I wonder whether he and his team ever considered the fact that we spend $400 billion, with a B, a year on Medicaid, which covers about 80 million Americans. That's about $5,000 per enrollee. Many of the concierge practices that target those who are financially well off only cost $2,000 or $3,000 per year. If we spent Medicaid dollars wisely, we could provide excellent care, including catastrophic care, for considerably less money than we are spending now.
You know, that's quite a number right there. When you say yeah. $400 billion and you divide it by 80 million, you come up with $5,000 per enrollee. Yeah.
And on the side, I can have a personal doctor on call, you know, for $2,000 to $3,000 a year. I don't think that's the same level of care. Obviously, you know, I think it just tells you when the government's in charge of something, that's what happens. You spend twice as much for half the care.
Yeah, and the example that we would offer up is get rid of the entire public school system, privatize the entire yeah. thing, and save billions of dollars.
Yeah, and the quality of education would skyrocket because there would be competition.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But what we educate a student for, what Freedom educates a student for, what these schools educate a student for compared to what Cumberland County educates a student for, it is, there's no comparison. Cumberland County spends per student what Fayetteville Academy charges for tuition. Those are the numbers. You would think that because they're educating so many that numbers would actually yeah. drive down and it would be less, and they're doing it for 1,000 and private's doing it for 3. No, it's actually just the reverse. It's $15,000 to $18,000 a year to educate a student in Cumberland County. Think about that.
Because it's not a market driven. Because it's government sanctioned.
And absolutely. That's
what, you know, I was trying to say a minute ago, it didn't really clearly communicate it, but when everything is driven by the security force that's in charge, then thoughts about what's the wisest decision to make to benefit myself is to get out of bed and go to work every day. When that's taken off the table, then my human existence, the way God made me, just goes down and down and down in my quality of life. I could be sitting around playing PlayStation all day thinking I'm doing great, but in reality, my quality of life is so poor compared to getting out and chopping some wood. Because I was made to do that. You know, Adam attended the garden before sin.
Absolutely. One of the things that we're going to see companies doing more and more is they're going to provide their own clinics. They're going to provide their own internal health care. That's going to become the new norm. Because at that point, it's so much less expensive than it is to go through these entities. You know, that'll be, and that's basically what he's talking about here on an individual basis.
Right. A lot of manufacturing companies have that.
Well, right now, Cape Fear has it. I mean, they have nurses that serve their nurses.
Mm. Right.
They have nurses for the nurses.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of folks that work at, like, meat packaging plants, and every one of them, they have nurses and clinics right there in the plant that the people can go walk in, like, and see.
At PCC, mm-hmm. we could go to the clinic and get medicine and everything for half the cost that we could go in town to the doctor, and we could get most basic things treated, and you didn't have to go spend money at the doctor's office.
Right.
And that was just, they were using that off the profits that they made from their company.
The president also made some fantastic comments that served as applause lines regarding energy, education, and a few other subjects. The real State of the Union is characterized by dishonesty and deception. Instead of pretending that everything is rosy, perhaps it would be wise for the president to replay the part of the speech about bipartisan cooperation and then figure out how his multiple veto threats, failure to communicate, and reluctance to seek bipartisan solutions fit the theme of his address.
And his executive orders.
So,
I think one of the largest applause when he said he only had 2 years left, right?
So they don't have any more elections to run, and the Republicans started clapping. And then, of course, he came back with his little...
I won both of them.
Yeah.
So, Joey, does Ben Carson have any chance?
I think foreign policy-wise, no. I think we really need a strong foreign policy guy, and I'm just not sure that he would have the ability to command that kind of respect. I think he might make a great vice president. He would be great to have on a on the ticket somehow, but I don't know that he would be foreign policy strong.
David, who are our next candidates going to be? Prophesy us to the Republican and the
Hillary.
Yeah, we won't stone you.
Yeah, well, I think of the Democratic side, I think you're pretty limited. I think you're going to, obviously, you're going to see Hillary make another run at it, but I've heard Joe Biden throw his 2 cents around, which is quite frightening. But I think Elizabeth Warren may be the dark horse on that side that could take it from Hillary because she's younger and she's probably more appealing.
She doesn't have the scandal that Hillary has.
Republicans, man, who knows?
So many guys out there.
And I think the Republicans a little bit more difficult to say because the party's so divided at this point. You've got your mainstream guys. Romney's talking about running again, and we got another Bush on the table now. You know, like it hasn't been that long.
That excites everybody.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and you hear all the governor think Chris Christie and Rick Perry and Bobby Jindal, and
I wouldn't mind seeing Alan West.
I don't know if he's broad enough to get the whole party. Scott Walker, I think, is a great candidate.
Ted Cruz in Texas.
Yeah, I mean,
no love for Rand Paul, Dave.
I think some of these guys that are closely associated with Tea Party things, I think the political machine is such that I don't know that they'll allow them
to get in.
Well, I know for a guy like Rand Paul, he's trying to broaden his horizon with appealing to minority voters and then some other, so I think he's working to do that. Mm-hmm. But again, like you said, ultimately it's probably going to be Jeb or Mitt or one of the guys that the RNC controls.
Because they haven't learned over the last two elections when you send out these milquetoast, middle-of-the-road Republicans, you get beat. That's all there is to it. They're not willing to take stands on issues.
I remember in the mid-90s, Alan Keyes was a black, Roman Catholic conservative. And, I felt back then because I was always watching every day my dad and I, when he'd get home from work, he and I would watch the previous night late in Madison, Wisconsin. They would play the Rush Limbaugh show. And so pretty much every day when he'd get home and supper would be on, my dad and I would watch Rush Limbaugh. And
That's when he was on TV.
Yeah. And so and radio, but he had TV. Yeah. And Ken Hamlin was usually the dude on the radio. He was a black conservative radio show host, Catholic. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to go as... back then, it seemed like, man, the Republicans, I don't think they'll elect a black president. You hate to... I don't. I think facts are facts. Facts are stubborn. I think there are some of our black Americans want to vote for a black person. And I think that it's possible to get white conservatives to vote for a black more than it is to get black conservatives to vote for a white. And I really think it would profit to, take a look at Ben Carson or Alan West or Herman Cain.
Alan West is the guy out of Florida, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and he's not. I don't think he's a Christian, because even though he's incredibly conservative, and I like reading his stuff, I would certainly not call him anything above the rate of carnal. He's still incredibly.
He's quite abrasive.
He's a low baller, and he's abrasive. And You know, just if you just want an indication, just go to his website and you see that your eyes are assaulted by the ads about as much as your eyes are assaulted when you watch Fox News and see their female news anchors. It's unfortunate, really.
Well, I think being too abrasive, I think that one of the benefits of Ben Carson is he has the ability to tear a guy to shreds.
Oh, he's so articulate.
And never raise his voice.
Genteel, yeah.
Gentle and kind and just easy to listen to. That's the. But, you know, again, he does. His wife, we talked about this a lot with Ron Paul, but sex appeal being what it is, his wife just not does not stand out there as saying, you know, he's not Michelle Obama or Laura Bush. Of course, Bill won with Hillary, so, I mean, you just never know.
Good point.
Yeah. Adam said that. He told me to say
that. You're welcome, man.
Well, I thought it was... I don't know, this is totally unrelated, but you see the scandal this week with them, with the Obamas in Saudi Arabia, and Michelle would not wear any of the covering, even in the presence of the Saudi king. And so, on one hand, I'm like, okay, yeah, I wouldn't want to bow to that pressure either. And then on the other hand, have a little respect for who you're visiting. You know, I mean, yeah. They're not telling you to wear a burqa. They just said you can't wear that sundress, and yet she wore it anyway. So that's, I think that might tell us a little bit about
that. Well, do you expect anything different from a president that flies a queer flag over our embassies?
Yeah, I know.
So with regard to Ben Carson.
To lighten the mood a little
yeah.
bit.
Billy's a Seventh-day Adventist. Is he a Christian?
I theologically, I think he could be. I've read after some Seventh-day Adventists that I do believe in salvation by grace through faith, and I've read some Seventh-day Adventists that clearly don't. And I don't want to make the comparison to the Baptist folks I've read after. You and I both know we've read after some Baptist folks that their easy prayerism, I think, makes them as easy as damned. I don't want to make that clear of a parallel because I do think that probably a Seventh-day Adventist has a theological structure that makes it difficult to make much of Christ in the scheme of salvation. But I think it's
now,
possible
is that because of their adherence to the law?
Yeah, they you would almost think that they are worshipers of the Sabbath itself rather than the Lord of the Sabbath. It's incredibly scary, really, sometimes when you hear it. It's almost a mantra. It's almost a hypnotic, really.
But again, when you read some of the writings, they don't say you have to keep. They talk about faith in Christ.
I think you're describing some. Yes.
Yeah, some of them. Yeah. Some of the ones I've read, not all of it.
Yeah. But again, like I said, I have my doubts about a lot of Baptists.
Yeah.
Would they claim exclusivity as them being the true church? Or did some they
have,
go that far?
Some have. Some have said that even the Mark of the Beast is worshiping on Sunday. Yeah. You know. So there have been some weirdos and fruits and nuts in that cornucopia, to be sure.
But one thing you can say about them, they're usually very healthy. They're very healthy people, and they're usually very intelligent.
Yeah.
The longest living community in the United States is a Seventh-day Adventist group out in California. They consistently have people reach 100 years because of what they do not eat and what they do not drink.
Somewhere near the Redwood Forest.
Yeah, didn't they drink Mountain Dew?
They probably don't. And you know, my grandmother got exceptional care at a Seventh-day Adventist hospital down in Orlando, Florida. So, yeah.
Well, Ben Carson, in my view, doesn't have a shot in the dark. I mean, it's unfortunate.
Well, the machine will roll out something to smoke him like they did with Herman Cain.
Right. Absolutely.
But I do think that if he goes Tea Party, he has even less of a chance.
But he's not really a Tea Party guy. I mean, he's talking about in the article, we can provide better health care than this.
Yes.
So he's not a small government conservative.
No, he's pragmatic. I mean, he's exceptionally pragmatic. This can be done better.
Right. Yeah, which has a better chance of winning, right? Let's provide what you want to provide at half the cost.
You would think.
Yes, but I don't think that the Republican Party would ever get behind somebody like that. And if you can't get the nod from them, you don't have a chance of winning. I mean, we say all this voting stuff, but there's an entity behind it, the curtain, that's pulling the strings.
Sure, it's called funding, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's huge. It's powerful. I mean, that's why Ted Cruz is not going to get it. It's why the guy West is not going to get it. It's going to come down between Romney or Bush.
Yeah, you're going to see these guys. And the people that support these candidates love these candidates. I mean, Carson's got devoted followers, and Cruz has devoted. Even Sarah Palin has devoted followers.
Which is really odd. She quit the governorship, didn't she?
Yeah.
Didn't she stop midterm?
Yeah. Yep.
And yet, yeah, like you said, the machine's got to be behind you. Without the money, because your Democratic opponent is going to make more, is going to raise twice the money you do. So you've got to have the machine behind you to run for an office like this. So what kind of compromises will you make to be the candidate?
Right. Who just left his talk show? Arkansas.
Huckabee.
Right. Doesn't stand a chance.
No
way in the world.
Way too Christian.
Right. Absolutely. Way too Christian. Yeah. You know. And so it's really unfortunate that that's where we're at, because you can't help but to wonder. We've seen Bushes. I don't know that another Bush is going to do anything.
Sure, and Jeb's going to be a lot more moderate than George W. He's already talking about we need to back off these moral issues and focus on the economy. And again, you're going to lose 30% of your Republican voting.
And George
block.
W. wasn't all that conservative.
No, he was by the end. He was a little more conservative.
Yeah, a little
to
more,
start
yeah.
with. To start yeah. with. Yeah.
No, but he walked away from it in a big way.
He had to get reelected.
No, he wasn't fiscally conservative at all.
He was the moral majority candidate. That was him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think John is right. It's only a matter of time until we're at tyranny. And it really goes down to the labor participation rate, John, because there's going to come a point where I say, I'm done. I'm tired of paying for everybody to sit on their fourth point of contact, and I go to work all day. It's going to create armed rebellion.
Well, there are already places where this is very stark. You know, New York City with the big gulp law. I mean, just on and on. And, you know, the focus on the wrong issues to the point of obsession, you know, with the diet and the environment. I mean, it's just, and they're very willing to be tyrannical in those areas.
I mean, think about what happened just last week is we couldn't get a law passed through the House of Representatives that protected a child after what, 20 weeks,
David.
When it's scientifically, unless they're science, right? Scientifically proven that the baby feels pain at that point.
That when you're ripping their arm off their body,
it hurts. Yeah, and we can't even get that passed through the House. Through a Republican-controlled, supposedly conservative, controlled House of Representatives.
And many of them ran on some of these very principles, and it was because of
one
the
right
women.
Here in North Carolina.
Yeah, because it was the women that were afraid that the language was too exclusive.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's what it was.
And what it really means is I'm afraid I won't be able to get reelected if I vote for them. That's
already,
really what it means.
And I can already tell you, Renee Elmers, I haven't voted for you in the last two elections, and I'm certainly not going to do it a third time. So, I mean, I'm just going to, because that's what the kind of stuff it is.
Right.
She's just there collecting a paycheck. She doesn't give a flying flip about what we believe.
Man, I'm glad you were careful of that. Because my subtitles didn't match what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean that is the fact.
Some army conversation.
But she'll get reelected. I mean, it's incredibly difficult to put an incumbent out of office.
It is.
I mean, it is just unbelievable. Look how hard Dick Button has been working in our little world to get an incumbent out of office. And it's almost impossible. So you have to say to yourself, when does a state like Texas say, we're done? Mm-hmm. We're done. We have oil, we have natural gas, we have money, we have jobs, we have an economy that's bigger than most countries in Europe.
And we have a National Guard.
Right. We have our own entities, we're done.
And the best football stadium in the country. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. Yeah. We're not.
They can have their own college football league.
Yeah.
In Texas.
Right. We're not paying any more for California. We're not paying any more. We're done. We're done contributing there. We think that that's a ridiculous idea, but it isn't. It isn't as far away. What nation hasn't went through splits?
It was a ridiculous idea in 1840 and 1852.
Right.
It was.
Nobody thought that the North, guys that were educated in the same West Point, Dave.
Yeah.
Same bunkmates, roommates, same classrooms were killing each other.
Yeah. And the lawmakers at that point are going, secession's illegal. Okay.
Come down here and stop us. Yeah. And that's what it was. And you know, like Lee would have been the general in the North. Had he not, had Virginia not left the Union, and that's what did. Virginia left the Union.
Right, so to suggest that it could never happen is absolutely absurd. And yet we're acting as though it's an impossible thing. Once somebody says we're not funding the debt anymore, and then states have to begin to exist on their own two feet, with no federal money. Because that's how it is now. Mm-hmm. The federal government manipulates the states with money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to give you road money if you don't do this.
We're not going to give you Medicaid money. We're not going to give you Medicare money. We're not going to do this. And as soon as that money dries up because the federal government can't get funded and states have to stand on their own two feet individually, that will set the conditions for succession.
And you can tell you which state, you know which states are going to survive and which states aren't going to survive. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
The states that have a stronger workforce.
The labor participation rate. The labor participation rate in the state will determine what side it falls on.
Well, we've just seen it in Arizona with the immigration laws. You know, the federal government is suing the state of Arizona for enforcing federal law.
Right. Right.
That's where we are right now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the governor of Texas, the new guy down there, Enrique Perry, said, hey, we talk like it's crazy, but it's not crazy talk. We were by ourselves before. We can be by ourselves again.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like a topic for the hour, not this hour, but an hour is for me, at least Bill Sturm, to think about, okay, what do I do if that happens?
Mm. Absolutely.
Because there were Bible preaching pastors in 1860.
Sure there were. Sure there were.
And they had to figure out, how do I address this current event with my flock?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a king. Well, that's another topic, another day, another News and Focus program. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.